This is Audible.
Harper Business and Harper Audio present The Alter Ego Effect, The Power of Secret Identities to Transform Your Life by Todd Herman. This is the author. A note before we begin. Don't forget to download the accompanying enhancement PDF from your audiobook provider. It contains useful information, diagrams, lists, and more, and will be referred to throughout as the enhancement. Preface. Before you enter. A note from the author. The Alter Ego Effect was built to support ambitious people doing hard things. It's constructed to help you be more resilient, creative, optimistic, and courageous. I've had a sports science and peak performance training company for 22 years, and what you're about to unwrap is based not only on the work I've done with thousands of amateur, pro, and Olympic athletes, but also the art and science of how we work. It's been shaped by the data collected from the more than 75,000 business owners and professionals who have implemented this strategy. Their reports back about the wins, successes, and breakthroughs, along with the tweaks and changes they've made, have all been used to refine this strategy. A final note. Since I started my practice and began working with more elite athletes, I made a commitment to privacy. I protect my clients. Some of the world's great Olympic and pro athletes, as well as entertainers, work with me because I promise never to use their names for personal benefit. Why? Because trust is the most essential currency I can trade. Everyone wants something from these people. They use them as a way to grab the spotlight, and it causes them to trust no one. I recognized it, and I knew it would prevent me from being the trusted advisor and coach they needed and wanted. I've worked with top business professionals as well, and the promise is the same. I hold that trust and promise sacred. But I also know how valuable and important it is to share their stories to help illustrate points and to make the ideas in The Alter Ego Effect spring to life for you. Throughout the audiobook, I've tried to balance the need to share my clients' stories with you, the reader, with my vow to my clients. To achieve this, I've sometimes changed details like names, a sport, an industry, and other identifying factors. In the end, these factors are actually irrelevant. As you're about to find out, the alter ego is a tool anyone, in any situation, in any profession, in any moment, can use to bring forth their heroic self. Todd Herman. Chapter 1. What's your phone booth moment? Standing in the green room, looking at my notes, I waited to be called on stage before a crowd of coaches from the world of sports. As I was reviewing my presentation, a man built like a powerful bulldog walked into the room. I'd played him on Nintendo as a kid. He strolled over to me with a big smile, reached out and said, "Hi, I'm Bo Jackson." I laughed and said, "Hi, I'm Todd Herman. I know who you are, Bo. I'd probably lose all credibility if I worked in sports and didn't know the only two-sport all-star in the pros. Plus, you helped me win a lot of games on Tecmo Bowl." He chuckled and said, "Yeah, you're not the first to say that. And thanks. Are you speaking today too?" "Yeah, I'm up next. But maybe I just got bumped for you," I laughed. "No, you're good. I just came early to see a friend," he said. "So what are you going to talk about?" "I'm going to talk about the mental game, but specifically, I'm going to share with everyone how to use alter egos and secret identities to perform at your best." Immediately, he cocked his head to the side slightly, squinted his eyes as if someone had just struck a deep chord inside him, and then smirked. He shook his head. After a few seconds, he said in a hushed, serious tone, "Bo Jackson never played a down of football in his entire life." If you don't know Bo Jackson, he's the only athlete in the big four of major North American sports to be an all-star in two of them, Major League Baseball and the National Football League. He was a phenom who transcended sports in the 1980s, and for a sport-loving kid like me, a superhero. My eyes widened as I smiled and said, "Okay, interesting. Tell me more? Bo went on to explain how as a youngster he had challenges containing his emotions and would get into a lot of trouble because of his anger. Often he'd get caught up in the competition, and he'd retaliate against even the smallest perceived slights, causing him to get hit with unnecessary penalties. One day, though, as he was watching a movie, he became fascinated by the unemotional, cold, and relentless nature of Jason. Does the name ring a bell? Jason was the hockey mask-wearing killer in the Friday the 13th movies. At that moment, during the movie, he resolved to stop being Bo Jackson and start being Jason on the football field, leaving the uncontrollable rage on the sidelines. Bo went on to explain how Jason only lived on the field, and when he walked out of the locker room and reached the football field, Jason would enter his body and take over. Suddenly, the hot-headed, penalty-prone, easy-to-provoke Bo Jackson transformed into a relentless, cold, and disciplined destroyer on the football field. Channeling a different identity helped him focus every ounce of his talent and skill and enabled him to show up on the field without any emotional issues interfering with his performance. It was his phone booth moment. Just like Clark Kent would sometimes go into a phone booth to transform into Superman, Bo Jackson did the same thing when he transformed into his alter ego, Jason. Except he didn't have to deal with annoying space issues like Superman explained in a 1942 comic. This definitely isn't the most comfortable place in the world to switch garments, but I've got to change identities, and in a hurry. While it's a funny quote, there's something embedded in his statement that reveals the transformational nature of the alter ego effect. Who's the alter ego? I've always been fascinated by comics, comic book heroes, and the worlds they live in. The origin stories, the villains, and the epic battles always found a way to draw me into their worlds. As a kid, I loved the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. Today, people might laugh at those 1980s productions compared to the epic rebirth of superhero movies happening now. But back in the day, they were awesome. Now here's a riddle for you. Everyone knows that Superman and Clark Kent are the same. But which one is the alter ego? I've asked this question for the past 15 years, countless times in front of audiences around the world, and 90% of the audience immediately yells out, Superman! It sounds right, because when you think of alter egos, you think of superpowers, heroism, and epic battles, all the qualities of a superhero like Superman. Except, it's wrong. The alter ego isn't Superman, it's Clark Kent. Superman is the real person. He created the alter ego, mild-mannered reporter Clark Kent as a useful persona to go unnoticed day to day on Earth and blend in to help him achieve a crucial goal, understanding humans. Superman would flip between his alter ego and the S on his chest at precisely the moments when he needed each persona the most. Why does this matter? Because frankly, life is hard. There are a lot of different responsibilities we all carry on our shoulders. There are a lot of different roles we play in life. And there are the constant forces of society, religion, families, teammates, coworkers, friends, and others that lead us to act a certain way. These come in the form of expectations, rules, and judgments about how we're supposed to act, what we're allowed to pursue, what we should have, what we should believe. All of this and more creates what I call the trapped self, which we'll reveal more of in Chapter 3. This trapped self is the part of you that doesn't feel like it's showing up in life like you want, avoiding certain things or feeling pressured to act in a certain way. Conversely, there's another experience we have in life, where we feel like our heroic self. It's that part of you that feels like you're doing what you want, doing it for your own reasons, and you get caught up in the flow of the activity. And it turns out, there's fascinating research on the subject that explains the benefits of alter egos. When you find yourself bored, anxious, angry, jealous, resistant, overwhelmed, or fearful, you can't reason yourself out of it. It's like a mouse trying to direct a herd of rampaging elephants. You can't logic your way out of an unconscious problem. If your gut is telling you to avoid it, you'll avoid it. But you can use that same unconscious power, tap into the mysteries of your imagination, and with a little practice, change whose gut you're checking. And lucky for us, research and science show us it's a better approach. the 15-year-old in the 4:35 a.m. train to New York. Anthony was a basketball player at one of the best prep schools in the United States, with off-the-chart skills. During practice, he'd school his teammates one-on-one. Scouts from all the top colleges were recruiting him, and people had him pegged as a possible pro baller one day. If he would show more poise during crunch time and believe in his abilities more. Anthony grew up in a low-income area of Washington, D.C., without a mom or dad. They both passed away in a car accident when he was 8 years old. His grandma took on the responsibility of raising him and was doing a damn good job under the circumstances. As a youngster, Anthony spent every second he could find taking refuge on the basketball court, dribbling, shooting, and jumping. He continued to develop, and soon scouts from all the top colleges were recruiting him. People had him pegged as a possible pro baller one day, if he would get his head screwed on straight. For all Anthony's skills and abilities, there was just one problem. When the game was on the line, instead of driving hard to the hoop or getting the defender on his heels and then pulling up fast and firing a jump shot, he'd pass the ball. He'd let a teammate take the shot or choke, and it was getting worse. Anthony had all the skill in the world to seize the opportunity, but he'd hide during what we call moments of impact, those critical moments that define a large part of our success. For Anthony, he got caught up in worrying about the criticism more than he wanted the adulation. The more the spotlight was placed on Anthony, the more he shrank from its glare. It wasn't until his coach, in a fit of frustration, yelled at Anthony during practice one day that he saw the answer. "Damn it, Anthony. If you could only be more like James, we'd be unstoppable." His mind fired off a memory of an email he'd read once about athletes who used alter egos on the court. When he got back home, he searched for the email. Then he did the thing that would terrify any parent, let alone his grandma. At the age of 15, he snuck out of his house, went down to Union Station in Washington, D.C. at 4 a.m. and caught the 4:35 Amtrak train to New York City. In 2011, I spent most of my mornings working from the Reebok Sports Club on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. It was a beautiful club with 6 levels and every amenity you could imagine. It's also famous for being a celebrity haven because they'd be left alone to work out. People like Chris Rock, Regis Philbin, Dwayne Johnson, Will Smith, Diane Sawyer, Ben Stiller, and many others. It was also where NBA teams would come and practice before games at Madison Square Garden. I had a routine of always arriving at around 8:45 and working in the private cafe for members. Then I'd get in a workout before lunch. One day as I walked into the lobby area, the front desk staff waved me over as soon as I got out of the elevators. They told me that the young man sitting over in the waiting area had come all the way up from D.C. to see me this morning. They said, "He came up here to see you and get help with his game. This freaking kid is dedicated." I walked over to Anthony and introduced myself, while he jumped out of his chair to shake my hand. "Mr. Herman, it's a pleasure to meet you. I hope I'm not being a problem, but I need your help." I brought him into the cafe where we grabbed some breakfast and sat down at a table. I asked him, first, how the heck did you know to come here? Second, do your parents know you're here? "You mentioned it in one of your email newsletters," he said, "that you come here in the mornings, so I thought I'd take a shot. And no, my grandma doesn't know. I snuck out of the house at 4 a.m., but she wouldn't know anyway because I leave early in the morning for school before she's up." "Okay, well, first things first, you need to call your grandma and let her know where you're at and that you're safe." After we got through the logistics of his escape from D.C. and I reassured his grandma I'd make sure he got home safe, we talked about his situation. He explained what was going on and that the more pressure he was feeling and the more people were watching him, the more he was overthinking things. He talked about the anxiety and how he felt, saying, "There's a war going on in my head. I really want this, but I'm so worried about what everyone thinks of me and making a mistake." Now, I'm not a therapist. I don't do therapy, and I'm terribly unqualified to do that kind of work. I work on the mental game and developing strategies for high performance. However, there's a simple framework I always use to diagnose the root of someone's problem. which I'll walk you through in Chapter 3. It didn't take long to figure out Anthony's issue. "So why did you come all the way up to New York just to see me?" I asked. "Because Coach said something to me that made me remember one of your emails about the sidelines of life, and how many great athletes use alter egos to help them perform better and leave parts of themselves on the sidelines. Because sometimes parts of their personality could be hurting their performance. And when Coach told me to be more like James, I thought of you." "Well, that's great, but why didn't you email me instead of stressing out your grandma?" "You always say, if you want something, go get it. And if you want something faster, go get it with a great mentor. I remember you talked about how you traveled all the way from Canada to North Carolina to meet a mentor once to spend weeks with him, and that it was one of the pivotal moments of your life. So I thought, I should do the same. But just so you know, I don't have any money to pay you." I fell in love with this kid. Chris Rock even stopped to give him words of encouragement when he was waiting for me. The staff told Chris what he'd done. Over the next couple of hours, I peeled back the onion on his game, and it was apparent that the spotlight he was shunning had nothing to do with the court. It had everything to do with the pain he'd felt when his parents passed away. In the aftermath, he'd had different people showering him with attention, even fighting over who should have him and the insurance money. All he'd wanted was to be left alone. Now the spotlight was back on, and Anthony was feeling the same thing all over again. Like I said, I don't do therapy, and I wasn't about to start. I suggested he talk to his school counselors or grandma about getting some help, because a great therapist can help unravel the fried wires in your head. But for now, let's leave Anthony on the sidelines and create an alter ego you can take on the court and get back to dominating. I walked Anthony through the process of creating his alter ego for his field of play, the basketball court. And when we got to the point of unpacking the people, characters, things, or animals he'd love to embody, he said, "A Black Panther. They come out of nowhere. They're quick to strike, and they're fluid. I watched this National Geographic show on them once, and the way they moved was just so cool. Plus, they can jump 20 feet, and they have this cool name, Ghost of the Forest." Watching him describe his alter ego, hell, I got excited. The next step was to give his alter ego a name. We brainstormed a bunch of different names in my notebook. The Black Panther, Panther X, Anthony Stealth. Nothing was popping for him until I suggested a name that made him come alive. The Black Ghost. I'll never forget. The kid sat back in his chair, raised his hands behind his head, looked up and said, "I am the Black Ghost, and I'm going to bring my mom and dad onto the court with me and haunt everyone." What Anthony did was something profound, and what I want to help you do throughout this audiobook. I left out of Anthony's transformation something crucial to building an alter ego that works for you. Now, whether you have some old trauma that's somehow interfering with your desires, or you've told yourself a story about what you can or can't do, or there's some undefined resistance holding you back from pursuing something, I want to tell you there's a heroic self waiting to get unlocked, and that an alter ego, or secret identity, is the key to activating it. When you see how an alter ego fits into the human condition, the different roles we play in life, and the fields of play we stand on, it gives you the freedom to unlock a creative force. When you see how an alter ego helps you battle the natural challenges we all face with greater optimism, it can unlock a more playful and empowering approach to overcoming fear. And when you see it's a natural part of being human, has been used by tens of thousands of people to achieve goals, both big or small, and is the most real you you could be, it will unlock hidden capabilities you didn't know were there. Before I go any further, I need to make a quick disclaimer, because I don't want to mislead you with that last statement. This isn't a motivational rah-rah audiobook filled with cotton candy ideas plucked from other cotton candy self-help books that riddle the bookshelf and e-readers. This isn't an audiobook with an easy button buried inside of it. There is no treasure map to a pile of gold coins. This audiobook is for real people doing hard things. This isn't an audiobook to remove the challenge of life. It's to take the part of you that shows up when you least expect it and show you how to get it to show up when you most need it. Your imagination can build extraordinary worlds and ordinary worlds. You've already been doing this, and here's a reminder that playfulness doesn't stop at 8 years of age. It's a pathway to handling life with more grace. Bottom line one, if you've got ambition, welcome to the tribe. Bottom line two, if you're someone who wants to argue for your limitations, wait until everything is perfect, or cowardly troll the ambitions of others, well, I'll leave you to decide what to do. The final goal. I've devoted the last two decades to answering one simple question. How can I help the ambitious people I serve take the capabilities already nested inside and use them to perform at peak levels consistently? Having built a peak performance and sports science practice over the past two decades and coaching some of the world's Olympic and professional athletes, top business leaders, entrepreneurs, and entertainers, I've been faced with situations like, how do I help the pro tennis star win championships instead of losing matches because she lets her opponents come from behind? How do I help the Major League Baseball pitcher stand on the mound before a crowd of 40,000 screaming fans and lead his team to a playoff victory instead of choking and letting batters knock him around? How do I get the sales executive to close more deals so his company grows and he gets promoted? How do I help the entrepreneur proudly market her services instead of letting her new venture barely scrape by? How do I help the hard-charging manager or VP become a calmer, more controlled, and better leader or coach with direct reports? How do I help the parent struggling to juggle the demands of life and work be more attentive, loving, and fun at home? How do I help the Broadway star slip into her flow state faster instead of feeling the terror and nerves of performing before live audiences? The answer to those questions was, and is, an alter ego. Back in the green room, Bo and I talked about the concept of alter egos, the other athletes using them, the process I'd use with clients, and that people in business and everyday life use them to achieve various things. For Bo, creating an alter ego was something he stumbled on naturally. He thought he was the only one to use it. For decades, we've been ignoring the breadcrumbs and signs from history that the alter ego is a natural part of the human condition, and this book is about changing that. I've waited 15 years to write The Alter Ego Effect, and my goal is to teach you the same method I've taught my clients for almost 20 years, so you can use one or many to overcome feats both big and small. I'm going to show you how to activate your heroic self, your inner Wonder Woman, Dalai Lama, Black Panther, Oprah, or Mr. Rogers, drawing forth the full range of your capabilities, skills, beliefs, and traits so you see what you're truly made of. I'm also going to share with you the science behind why this method is so effective and share the stories of Olympians, business professionals, moms, entertainers, authors, children, and myself who have all used it to overcome challenges. I used it and use it still. And there's a reason why a pair of glasses is on the cover. But whose are they? Chapter 2. The Origin of Alter Egos. Shep Gordon is known as the Supermensch. He's a talent manager, Hollywood film agent, and producer. GQ called him the unfamous man who made everyone famous. Shep played a pivotal role in the careers of Jimi Hendrix, Alice Cooper, Teddy Pendergrass, Luther Vandross, Raquel Welch, and Groucho Marx. Shep is what you could call old school. He never has contracts with his clients. Everything is done with a handshake, and everyone in the biz knows if he says it will happen, it will happen. Shep is the person responsible for the celebrity chef world we live in today. He literally invented the market. Emeril Lagasse, Daniel Boulud, Wolfgang Puck, and more would be unknown to the general public if it weren't for Shep. Actor and director Mike Myers even produced a documentary on his life, aptly titled Supermensch, The Legend of Shep Gordon. I happened to meet Shep at one of the world's premier events for creators, entrepreneurs, and artists, Mastermind Talks, hosted by Jason Gaynard. Shep is one of the greatest storytellers you could ever meet. His stories about Alice Cooper are both rich and hilarious, though it doesn't hurt that he has some of the most iconic material to work with. While I was sitting in the audience of 150 people, listening to Shep recount his tales as a scrappy Hollywood super agent, someone asked him how he helped the high performers he worked with find that extra gear and continued to perform at a high level. Shep Gordon's response was honest, poignant, and profound. I think each one is very, very different. I think there's just one general rule that I use to try and give to every artist, whether they were chefs or they were entertainers. It's that if you allow the public figure to actually be you, you're never going to be happy. And you're never going to be confident, because if you take the traits of who you are and develop that into a character that you understand, you'll always know what that character should do. So when you're in a press conference, you always know how to answer a question. If it's you personally, you never have the answers. It's really tough. And when you take it personally, that's when you start scarring. If a bad review is about that person, you change that person. If a bad review is about you, sometimes that wound can be very deep. So I don't think you can generalize, but if there's any generality, I would say it's if someone who's in the public eye can understand that people aren't loving you, they're loving that character that's been put in front of them. Even from my movie, I get people come up to me, "You're the greatest, you're unbelievable." They don't know me. They know that guy. So if you can keep that distance in your own brain, it's much healthier. About 15 people in the audience who knew my work looked over at me immediately. Some had dropped their jaws in amazement. Some grinned and winked. And Jason, conducting the interview from the stage, found me in the crowd and shook his head with an, "Oh my God, you've been talking about this forever," look in his eyes. If you'd like to watch the clip, go to alteregoeffect.com/Shep. Afterward, Shep and I discussed the concept more and how it was something far more universal than just a celebrity, entertainer, or athlete using it while under the spotlight of a stage or field. An alter ego is a useful tool to help you, me, and others handle the adversity of life with more resiliency. Explore our creative sides while protecting a fragile self. Be far more intentional about who we're trying to be on the fields of play. It's not only backed by the thousands of people who have used alter egos, but more specifically, the system I've created over the past 2 decades is also backed by research and the success stories of numerous people you'll hear about in the chapters to come. The roots. The first century BC Roman statesman and philosopher Cicero was the first documented person to talk about the alter ego in his philosophical works, although the term he used was a second self, a trusted friend. Its actual Latin meaning is the other I. These are all important distinctions because the concept has been around for centuries. And when you look at the roots from which the idea was shared, trusted friend or the other I, they're extremely healthy terms. And if Cicero were alive today, he'd admit he was simply giving form to a naturally occurring part of the human condition. Just as I didn't invent alter egos, Cicero didn't either. The only thing I've done is create a system for building one and give you a framework to activate its tremendous benefits, the alter ego effect. And you'll see throughout the book the way people have used it for any number of purposes. I first stumbled onto the power of alter egos as a teenager, growing up on a 6,000-acre ranch in a small farming community in Alberta, Canada. I was an outgoing, ultra-competitive, and sports-loving kid. I would challenge my older brothers, Ross and Ryan, to anything. I'd lose most of the time, but I knew that someday I'd be able to beat them. And when that happened, I'd never let them hear the end of it. Sports were my refuge, because underneath the cocky, competitive kid was a terribly insecure and worrisome kid. My mind was always rolling over whether people liked me, how to win people over, or how to impress them. When I played sports, all of that went away, and my competitive spirit took over. There was just one catch. I couldn't control my emotions. When I was 14, my tiny rural school of Schuler was playing in a volleyball tournament in Golden Prairie, Saskatchewan. During the tournament, a player across the net was driving me nuts. Every time he went to spike the ball or jump for a block, he purposely kicked out his foot, trying to kick me in the groin. The first time, I let it slide, because I thought it was an accident. But he kept at it. I complained to the refs, but it was obvious they weren't going to call a foul on the home team. As the game went on, he started getting more and more brash. Finally, after a solid kick to my groin, I erupted. When his feet touched the ground, I reached through the net, grabbed his shirt, pulled him in, cocked my fist like a loaded pistol, and smashed him in the face through the net. He crumpled. The place went crazy, or about as crazy as a junior high volleyball tournament can get. Whistles started blowing, players and coaches rushed the floor, and my teammates looked at me like, what the hell just happened? Later that day, after I'd been thrown out of the tournament, my coach, Mr. Henderson, sat me down for a heart-to-heart. He reamed me out for fighting and for making the school look bad. He had wanted to talk to me for a while about my sportsmanship, but a good old fight finally tipped the can. He told me I needed to drastically overhaul my attitude. Mr. Henderson knew I had aspirations to play college football one day, but he told me, Todd, you're hard to coach because you're a know-it-all. Nobody likes playing with you because you just yell at them for mistakes. And unless you turn things around, you're going to make it a lot harder than you need to get to where you want to go. Mr. Henderson was one of my many mentors I've had in life. Some could hear that and think he was being harsh. We were close, and I respected him. But that didn't mean I didn't argue back, because I did. Like any great coach, he didn't leave me in a place to figure it out on my own. If you want to achieve the goals you have, then you need to master what's happening inside of you, he told me. When you get to school on Monday, there's a book in the library I want you to get and read. I did as I was told, and Monday I grabbed the book from the library. Frankly, it was terrible. However, there was one good thing that came out of it, and it was something the author mentioned regarding the mind. It tapped into my curiosity to learn more, and I began to study the inner game, mental toughness, meditation, which back then was still pretty woo-woo, and how to get into the zone. Another version of me. Back in 1877, legendary Native American chief Sitting Bull fled across the border into Canada after the Battle of the Little Bighorn and the death of Colonel George Armstrong Custer. When the natives entered Canada, they were met by Royal Canadian Mounted Police and granted refuge from the U.S. Army. Sitting Bull stayed in the area for 4 years, brokering peace deals with other tribes until finally returning to the United States and surrendering. My family's farm isn't far from where they entered Canada and where they ultimately hunted, gathered, and lived. While this has nothing to do with volleyball outbursts, it does have a lot to do with the rest of this book and helping you find a source of inspiration to unlock a heroic self. Growing up on the farm and doing whatever job Dad needed us to do meant we were constantly digging, pulling, and navigating the large swath of open prairie. While out on our tasks for the day, we'd come across old fire rings, places where natives camped for the night, and I'd always dig around them to see if I could find any arrowheads or other artifacts. Because of the rich history of the area, I became extremely interested in Native American culture. One day while lying on the sofa reading up on war dances, a ceremony where a small group of natives would dance around a fire ring, chanting, I learned the purpose was to gather as one and channel the spirits to help them in their quest. Suddenly it clicked. I put the book down on my chest and visualized channeling a tribe of warriors to take out onto the field with me. I felt supported, focused, and depended upon. The idea gave me an incredible sense of calm and purpose. The next time I stepped onto the football field, I went out as a tribe of warriors. I was a scrawny but fast little kid, and I wanted to play with more power. It seemed to help keep me focused, but I wanted something more. So, I thought about channeling players I admired, people like Walter Payton, the phenomenal running back for the Chicago Bears, and Ronnie Lott, the devastating defensive player for the San Francisco 49ers. Before football games, I would take 5 of Payton's and Lott's trading cards and strategically slip them into my uniform. I would put one of Payton's cards inside my helmet and one on each of my thigh pads, imagining that I would run and see the field just like him. Then I would take Lott's trading cards and slip one into each shoulder pad, imagining that I could unleash devastating hits and tackles just like he did. I taped everything down and would go on the field as my Frankenstein-like alter ego. It was patched together from a few different sources, but it worked. As a result, I played way bigger than my scrawny size. In the end, I reached my goal and played college football. It didn't solve all my problems by any stretch, because I still dealt with problems at school and in my personal life. But on that field of play, I left those problems on the sidelines and stepped into the best version of myself so I could compete. Like Shep mentioned, the alter ego became a shield for my core self and gave me a clear image of who needed to perform on that field to win. The Mysteries of the Mind. Beloved British actor Rowan Atkinson, famous for his character Mr. Bean, was bullied for his stuttering throughout his school years. As he progressed through school and eventually earned a Master of Science in Electrical Engineering from Oxford University, he discovered something profound. While in school, the boy who over-articulated and stuttered developed an interest in the dramatic arts. In the August 23, 2007 issue of Time magazine, Atkinson was asked if he still stuttered. He simply replied, "It comes and goes. I find when I play a character other than myself, the stammering disappears." That may have been some of the inspiration for pursuing the career I did. Atkinson's experience highlights a fascinating aspect of the human condition. We don't know everything there is to know about how the brain works. We're still working on mapping the undiscovered country. However, we do know that our imaginations are an incredible force to create new worlds and new possibilities if used with intention. In other stories I'll share, athletes have altered aspects of their physical performance by tapping into another self. This has happened despite the fact their parents had spent thousands of dollars on skill training that couldn't fix the problems. It's a mystery of the mind, but there are some theories on why it happens. Different place, different time, same method, and Joni Jocks. Flash forward to my early 20s, and I again returned to this concept of the alter ego, although that wasn't what I called it at the time. I had just started a sports training business in my spare time. I was having success through the referrals I was getting, but it wasn't enough to sustain it. I knew I could help people, but to actually get out there and market myself tied me up inside. I was insecure about how young I was and worried no one would take me seriously. After all, you need to be at least 40 to be taken seriously. That was actually a rule I had in my head, that 40 equals respect. Don't ask me how it got there, because it was absurd. It didn't help that I thought I looked like I was 12. One afternoon, while I was self-suppressing, which means avoiding doing the work I was supposed to, I watched an episode of Oprah that changed my life. That last sentence is a cliche, but cliches are cliches because they're true. It was 1997, and Joni Jocks shared with the audience how she had purchased a pair of Oprah's shoes during a charity sale, and it changed her life. She said, "I bought the shoes, and I really loved them, and I kept them in my bedroom. And when I got really, really depressed, and I couldn't find anybody to talk to, I took the shoes out and..." Oprah cut in. "Stood in my shoes. She would stand in my shoes, and now she says she doesn't have to stand in the shoes as much because she's standing on her own." Later, Joni shared that the weight of the world just dropped off. Life totally changed that day. A light bulb went off at that moment, and I remembered the alter ego I'd use on the sports field. Joni had made something pop. For some reason, it didn't occur to me to use it in business. But in the end, that world was just another field to perform on. Just as Joni used a pair of shoes to feel more confident, I knew immediately what I was going to use to step into a better version of myself in business. Growing up, all the smart people I knew wore glasses. When we're young, we establish beliefs and attitudes about the world around us that shape our thoughts and behaviors. I had come to equate being taken seriously and being smart with wearing glasses. So I thought, what if I wore glasses? I figured, as absurd as it sounds, it's worth a try. I thought people looked smart and serious while wearing glasses, so perhaps prospective clients would think so too. In fact, a variety of studies have found that people wearing glasses are perceived as honest, industrious, smarter, and more dependable. Even defense lawyers ask their clients to wear glasses at trial. Lawyer Harvey Slovis explained to New York Magazine, "Glasses soften their appearance so that they don't look capable of committing a crime. I've tried cases where there's been a tremendous amount of evidence, but my client wore glasses and got acquitted. The glasses create a kind of unspoken nerd defense." It also turns out one of the most respected men of the 20th century and a leader of millions wore glasses when he didn't need to. Martin Luther King Jr. wore glasses because he felt they made him look more distinguished. The glasses on the cover of this book look a little like Clark Kent's and a little like mine. However, to me, those glasses are Dr. King's. They're meant to be a signal and reminder that great people have used elements of this concept with purpose, and it's made a huge difference for everyone. Someone listening to this, maybe you, could be a harbinger of change and unlock a part of yourself and make something great happen. In an upcoming chapter, I'll share the powerful science behind what I call a totem or artifact to activate your alter ego. After watching Joni's story, feeling inspired, I raced to the eyeglass store and bought a pair of prescription-free glasses, much to the bewilderment of the staff. "You're sure you want to buy glasses without a prescription?" the clerk asked. "Yes, please." "But you have perfect vision. Why would you want a pair of glasses?" "Because I'm weird, okay? Can I just get the glasses, please?" This was long before glasses became a fashion item like they are today. I started wearing them when I dealt with prospective clients. Just like I used my persona on the sports field, I now transformed into Richard. Richard is actually my first name, but I had always and still do today go by Todd. I put the glasses on only when I needed to be Richard, and I took them off as soon as business was over. A pattern emerges. I spent years working with athletes before I realized that what I had used to give me an edge and to level up my performance was actually something other athletes used too. I was speaking with one of my coaching clients, a swimmer, with her eye on securing a spot on the Olympic swim team, when she mentioned how she became a different version of herself as soon as she dove into the pool. There was something about her comment that made me pause and think, "That's interesting." There was something about what she said that dislodged other, eerily similar comments that other athletes had said to me over the years. Until this point, I hadn't noticed or paid attention. I keep detailed notes on all my clients, so after she mentioned this different version of herself to me, I pawed through old notepads and computer files looking for other similar statements. To my surprise, I didn't just find one or two athletes who said similar things. I found many. They didn't call it an alter ego, a secret identity, or any other name. Some would call it a different version of myself, like the Olympic hopeful swimmer. Others said they would pretend to be someone from comics or movies like Wolverine. A lot of athletes mentioned comic book or superhero characters, or sports heroes, as the person they imagined themselves to be. Now that I had noticed the pattern, whenever a client mentioned they would step into a different version of themselves, I would ask what sort of prop they would use. I figured that since I use trading cards and eyeglasses, other people could use something similar to help this other version of themselves come out too. My hunch was right. Many athletes had something they used. It wasn't enough for me to notice the pattern. I wanted a way to use what I had found to help other athletes. A new way. Athletes often struggle with feelings of judgment, worry, and criticism. Their inner critic is the reason many players don't take the last shot to tie the basketball game, why they strike out with runners on second and third with the score tied, or why they miss the putt to take the lead. Something gets in the way. There are any one of a number of tools in the inner game toolkit we can use to help someone perform to their capabilities. Some of them are long-term strategies: meditation, better instruction, relaxation and breathing control, imagery and visualization, skill development, routine development, goal setting, in some cases, even therapy. I use them while working with clients. However, when I was being called on a Thursday to help someone who had an important competition on a Saturday, I needed more than just long-term strategies. I needed to help someone now. Some of the strategies already listed could be used in a tight time window, but I found that only one delivered consistent results time after time. That is why it's been a pillar strategy and why I happen to be known as the alter ego guy in pro sports. Now that I'm 2 decades into my career, I've shared the strategy beyond the sports and entertainment world. I've seen people use the alter ego effect to secure funding for their startups, become better parents, launch new online businesses, write books, and pursue goals they've been sitting on for years. I've talked about the alter ego effect throughout the book so far. Now let me show you how it works and why it's so effective. Chapter 3, The Power of the Alter Ego Effect. Ian is a smart marketing professional and the founder of a multi-million dollar e-commerce business. In his former life, Ian was a serious tennis player. "I wasn't just someone winning a few high school matches. In college, I won a national championship," he told me. A fierce competitor who since the age of 3 had a racket in hand, Ian had the physical abilities to go to the next level. Sadly, those could only take him so far. "Ask anyone who played tennis with me, and they'd tell you the same thing. I was a classic case of wasted potential. I had the physical capabilities, but I couldn't pull it together mentally or emotionally. I was a psychopath on the courts, breaking rackets and punching walls after I lost." What drove Ian mad with anger, rage, and frustration? I mean, it was only a tennis match after all, right? Except, to Ian, it wasn't just a tennis match, and he wasn't just losing at some weekend match. "In my mind, I wasn't losing a tennis match. I was failing as a human being, because being a tennis player was my identity." Okay, let's pause and replay that statement. "I was failing as a human being because being a tennis player was my identity." Does that resonate with you? If you're ambitious, it most likely does. Ian's prophetic statement lies at the beating heart of the alter ego effect and the model I want to walk you through. The reasons why it's resonated with thousands of people and empowered people to make decisive changes are, number one, it makes sense and you already know how to do this. Number two, it allows you to see the multidimensional person you are with the different roles you play and be intentional about who shows up where. So you don't bring a Clark Kent when who you need is a Superman. Number three, it gets to the heart of why talented, capable people underperform. They don't realize it, but they're being unintentional about what who is showing up on their field of play and into those moments of impact. What do I mean by who is showing up? Let me explain. How do you become you? Before I get into walking you through the stages of building your own alter ego or secret identity, I want to show you why it's so powerful and why it's very easy to slip into a version of yourself that isn't built to succeed. Over the next few minutes, we're going to be building out a model to explain how we become what we become. Through the rest of the audiobook, we'll use it to approach life with more confidence, courage, and conviction. To start things off, you need to understand you have a core self. The core self is where possibility exists. It's this deep inner core where a creative force resides, waiting to be activated by the power of intention. Because human beings have this incredible ability to imagine, create, and decide, it gives you the opportunity to change something in an instant. The core self is where your deep desires, aspirations, and dreams reside. If you've ever avoided admitting to yourself what you truly want, that's probably your core self talking to you. It's those internal nudges you get to take action and move towards something that excites you or lights you up. It's also the source of intrinsic motivation. If you've ever found yourself trying to answer a question about why you do something or why you care, but you can't find the words, you're probably being driven by an intrinsic motivator. They're the intangibles, something you can't touch, hold, or show someone else. Human beings have a collection of intrinsic motivators that, when you tap into them, drive a more meaningful level of action. Things like growth, the desire to improve and constantly get better. Curiosity, the desire to discover new things. Mastery, the desire to learn and become excellent at something. Adventure, the desire to be challenged and explore the world and ourselves. Enjoyment, the desire to feel satisfied with our efforts and lost in the moment. Self-mastery, the desire to feel autonomous and to direct your own life. Love, the desire to care deeply for someone or something. These intrinsic motivators are shared by everyone in some way or another. They're baked into the human condition, and they're extremely important to leading a life of meaning. The problem arises when we start to confuse all the other layers that influence our thinking, emotions, and behaviors with who we really are. If you've ever tried to unravel the mystery of how you became who you are, it can feel like being caught in a spiderweb. The more you try, the more you wrap yourself up and get stuck. You can't explain why you became indecisive when faced with an important decision. You can't understand why you clam up and get nervous or second-guess ideas when you're in a room with certain people. You don't know why you keep talking and talking during a sales call, which talks a potential customer out of the sale. Or why you keep dreaming about starting a business, but it never happens. It's critical to understand that at our core, we are a force for creative possibility, whatever that may be for you. You may have wondered how you became the way you are, or you said to yourself, "But that's just me. That's just the way I am." Maybe not. Who we are, specifically the person we bring to our various fields of play and how we perform, is heavily influenced by external and internal factors. I break these groups of influence into four layers that surround our core self. You can also find a complete map of the field of play model at alteregoeffect.com/resources. Layer 1, your core drivers. What motivates you at a grander scale than yourself? This is where you'll find what you deeply care about, deeply relate to, and deeply identify with. These give you a sense of purpose and can often be things people feel define them. Your deeper purpose could be related to family, community, nation, religion, race, gender, identifiable group, idea, or cause. However, as you'll see, these core drivers and any of the layers can also affect you negatively as well. Layer 2, the belief layer, how you define yourself and the world around you. This is where you'll find your attitudes, beliefs, values, perceptions, experiences, and expectations toward how you see yourself and how you perceive the world around you. Layer 3, the action layer, how you show up. This represents the skills, competencies, and knowledge we've developed over time. It's also the behaviors, actions, and reactions we have on the field of play and during our moments of impact. Layer 4, the field of play. What's happening? This is the area of context. In this layer, we're influenced by our actual physical environment, the circumstances, the constraints, the people, places, and things that we interact with, and their expectations. All of these layers influence and shape how you think, feel, and see yourself in relation to the different areas of your life, or what we refer to as the fields of play. Each of those layers is built up over time. Often we're unaware of some behavior, and it's because the influences are outside of our awareness. We're going to be looking at these layers more deeply and how to use them to change our results with the help of an alter ego. You may see yourself as someone who's a kind and nice person. Those are great qualities. However, on the field of play of work, people may take advantage of that kindness and heap more work on you than is fair, or use it to negotiate unfair terms. Instead, I'm asking you to be more intentional about who needs to show up on that field. This isn't about dishonoring who you are. This is about really looking at the characteristics that will help you succeed and bringing that part of you to life with the help of an alter ego. From church choir to sold-out stadiums. Sundays were a day people looked forward to in the Black Bottom neighborhood on the east side of Detroit. They'd wake up, put on their Sunday best, and head down to the St. John's United Methodist Church to hear an angel sing. The choir was always filled with great singers, but there was one who stood out. Jada came from a religious family that loved gospel music. Their home was filled with music, and she and her sister would belt out any tune you'd ask them to sing. The people in East Detroit loved it when she'd share her gift with them on Sunday. Her father recognized her unique voice and started taking Jada and her best friend, Alicia, around the Detroit area to talent competitions. After a while, their group of two became a group of six, and they formed a girl group that began rapping and dancing their way to competition wins. As the years went by, this gospel-singing girl from a religious family started to gain more national attention, but a problem emerged. Jada found it hard to perform the more suggestive lyrics and dance moves on stage, but she loved the creative expression and freedom she felt while she was up there. Her ambitions were creating an internal conflict. Her solution? She turned to an alter ego, Haley Storm. Unlike Jada, her real self, Haley embraced the provocateur. Haley Storm wasn't afraid to shake, shimmy, and shine on stage in front of crowds that were swelling into the thousands. The young gospel-singing girl who grew up dazzling the parishioners of the church had grown into an international superstar. Except she wasn't actually from Detroit. Her name isn't Jada, and her alter ego wasn't Haley Storm. If you didn't already guess, this superstar is Beyoncé Knowles from Houston, Texas, and her alter ego that helped bring her to fame was Sasha Fierce. However, St. John's United Methodist Church was the church she wowed people at every Sunday. In multiple interviews, Beyoncé has mentioned how and why she used her alter ego. When I see a video of myself on stage or TV, I'm like, who is that girl? I have created an alter ego, things I do when performing I would never normally do. I reveal things about myself that I wouldn't do in an interview. I have out-of-body experiences on stage. If I cut my leg, if I fall, I don't even feel it. I'm so fearless. I'm not aware of my face or my body. I have someone else that takes over when it's time for me to work and when I'm on stage. This alter ego that I've created that kind of protects me and who I really am. Then famously, after her 2008 album, I Am Sasha Fierce, she retired her alter ego. She didn't need her anymore. Whatever transformation or experimentation Beyoncé needed Sasha to help with as a performer was complete. It may be difficult to look at your life and call yourself a performer. You may not be performing in the context of a Beyoncé, Ellen DeGeneres, or David Bowie with thousands of people expecting a show, but if you think about show as simply a fulfillment of expectations, you'll see the parallels very quickly. We do have expectations to fulfill. A show. We do have to perform our responsibilities. A show. Many of us have ambitions buried inside us that are difficult, challenging, and demand something we're not quite sure we can fulfill. So why not use an alter ego? You have stages you're already performing on and stages you might like to perform on. And my question is, would you like to show up there as the heroic version of yourself? I've spent more than 15,000 hours working one-on-one with elite performers like Olympians and CEOs, all the way down to 10-year-old kids. The alter ego effect is and has been my weapon of choice when trying to help good people do hard things. It's also a very natural way humans can deal with adversity with more calm, cool, and confidence. And researchers at the University of Minnesota showed its effectiveness. Activating your heroic self. If you've already started to play with this concept in your head, maybe you've started to think, it'd be kind of cool to show up with a secret identity. If something doesn't work out, I don't need to be so hard on myself and my secret identity can take the blame. I can leave that identity on the field, like Beyoncé, and save myself from the worries and judgments I normally kick myself with. I'm taking a few liberties with your self-talk here, but let's run with it. Cool? Well, the idea of using alter egos to create some distance between how you currently see yourself and how you'd like to perform is not only smart, it's backed by research. A lot of my clients initially talk about how their alter egos protected them, only to later realize that their alter ego was actually who they always were and who they had always wanted to be. This idea of space and distance between our identities is something that researchers are starting to validate. A recent University of Minnesota study of 4 and 6-year-old children found that to teach kids perseverance, parents should teach children to pretend to be like Batman or another favorite character because it creates psychological distance, the very thing my clients like Ian talk about, and what I've observed happens when people create alter egos. The study split kids into 3 groups. The researchers put a toy in a locked glass box and gave the kids a ring of keys. The catch? No key worked. The researchers wanted to see how to improve the children's executive functioning skills and were interested in seeing how long they would try to unlock the box and what they would try. To help the kids, the researchers gave them what they called strategies. One strategy was to pretend to be Batman. The kids could even wear a cape. Dora the Explorer was a choice too. researchers found that the kids who worked the longest were the ones who impersonated Batman or Dora, followed by children who just pretended, and finally the kids who remained in the first-person perspective. The kids impersonating Batman or Dora were more flexible thinkers. They tried the most keys, and they were calmer. One 4-year-old even said, "Batman never gets frustrated." The study shows us the power of identity, the power of how we see ourselves, and what happens